is that all the people that were usually preaching or in charge of certain ministries, they've all vanished, or vanished, now they're just kind of hiding, but they've all vanished, and they've left it to us, the general congregation, to figure out how we're going to do things in their absence. Somehow I ended up here. I don't know how that happened, but here I am. And we decided together as a church we were going to talk about what it is to love your neighbor. We decided that, I think, because it's February, it's that season of love. Everyone's all excited about Valentine's Day, and we're talking about love. So that kind of came about, and then we decided to add the subtext, how to love when it's difficult, and they've made it hard. So here we are. So this is what we're doing. It's pretty exciting. We're excited you can all be here to see whatever this is going to turn out to be. So I wanted to start with where that scripture is, looking up love thy neighbor and what that is in the Bible. I didn't realize until I started studying it for this how many times it really is in there. It's in there as early as like Leviticus, way back in the beginning of the Bible. I think a lot of us know it better from when Jesus is talking about it, and that's where I'm gonna pick up in Matthew 22. This is when the Pharisees, the religious teachers of the law, are trying to trip Jesus up. They come to him and they're asking him a question. They say, "Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Sounds pretty important when Jesus puts it in that kind of context, when he says that love God is the most important, and right after that is love people. So I think that's a pretty good place for us to start tonight. Tonight we're going to do something a little different. I'm not going to talk the whole time, thank the Lord. But we're actually going to break up the lesson tonight with four different people who are going to talk about what the church has done for them as far as loving them. When they were difficult to love, how did someone step in and love them despite how hard they are to love? So tonight, we're going to start with Emily Waddell, who is so excited to talk. I remember when Emily came. I have the mic. I remember when Emily came, was it been 2 years now? And it's been totally different to see how much you've changed. It's been super exciting. I'm just going to let you talk about your stories and how people loved you. So give it up for Emily.
So my name is Emily Waddell, and I'm part of the campus ministry here. I'm going to set a timer so I just know how long I'm going and don't like linger here for a long time, which I'm doing right now. But I am from Searcy, Arkansas. I grew up in church, and so my family went every Sunday, every Wednesday. Like, we looked like a great family. But around the time that I was in high school, my sister was diagnosed with manic bipolar, and so that was very hard on my family. Like, she was in and out of the hospital and jail from the time I was around like 13 or 14, up until today. I don't really know where she's at right now. Like, honestly, she's homeless. I'm not sure what she's doing. But at that time, the church that I was in, they weren't really there for us at all. They didn't really love on my family. We just didn't get to see what a church family should be like at all. And so throughout my high school years, I just felt kind of alone. I didn't get a whole lot of like attention at that time. My family needed to focus on my sister, for sure. And so I think that kind of brought forth a lot of insecurity with me of like, where do I get love at? And so I kind of sought that when I went to college. I sought that love in a lot of places that were not healthy. I went to guys. I went to partying, drinking, smoking, anything I could do to just kind of feel okay. And so through that time, I became so self-obsessed, so insecure, and then totally worried about how I looked, my image, just trying to have a good time, but not having a good time, just pretending to have a good time. And I think what really hit for me, the kind of last straw of like, okay, I'm really broken, was So my best friend really liked this guy, and I knew this, and I slept with him anyways. I just kind of realized, like, there's something wrong with me. Like, this is not okay. And that's when I came here. I came here to get away from that, to just kind of escape that. None of my friends would talk to me anymore, which who would want to at that point? So I met some people here, Ayana and Aaliyah, and they would come out an hour to come see me. They studied the Bible with me, and I just totally wanted something different. I didn't like who I was at that point. I'm so sorry. Thank you. Yeah, and so I feel like I didn't understand why they would want to be my friend. Even when they learned about the things that I had done, they weren't judgmental. They just wanted to love me and be my friend. And so that just totally showed me what I had missed out on when I was in high school, and I needed that. And through the Crossings Church, I've met people that are my family now. Like, I live with Jake and Katie over the summer. I'm going to again this summer. Like, I do have family here, and I have people that love me and care for me. Even though at that point, I was not a good friend. I did not care about other people. I just cared about myself. So I could not be more grateful for all the people at the Crossings and what they've done for me.
I feel a little sadistic. I'm over here smiling at her while she's sobbing. But it's just really cool to see how she let God change those things in her heart and in her life, and how people have loved on her. It's really awesome. So what we're going to start with tonight, when we're talking about loving thy neighbor, I feel like the first question should be, why should I even love my neighbor? Maybe that's an easy question for some of us. Maybe that's difficult. Maybe it's just, why should I? Why should I love my neighbor? And the first answer to that I have on here is, I love because God commands it. That may not make a whole lot of sense to some of us that are still, you know, seeking out what they believe, and if they believe that God is truth and anything like that. So I understand that that might be a little different for you, but for those of us who have made a commitment to God, we've made a commitment to follow God. That's important. He says in that last verse I just read, this is the first and greatest commandment, and the second's like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. I think that makes it pretty cut and dry how important Jesus viewed loving your neighbor. I don't think that was optional. I don't think that was a suggestion. I think Jesus is saying that is important. The book of Romans, Paul's writing to the Roman church, and he says, let no debt remain outstanding, except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, are summed up in this one command. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. I think you think about that, and you look at those things, those commandments to not commit adultery, not to murder. I think it's pretty plain to see when you look at them how they're a fulfillment of that. Can I honestly go to my wife with a bouquet of flowers, hand her flowers, tell her I love her, and then leave, go to the bar, and pick up some girl and sleep with her? Is that love? Does anybody think that's love? No. Not at all. Love is our actions, right? Like the second one, you shall not commit murder. If I hug my brother and say I love you and I stab him in the back repeatedly, that's not love. There's nothing loving about that. Love is action. And that's what I think this is talking about here when he says the commandments are fulfilled in this one command. They're summed up in this one command. Even back in that first verse we started from, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Because if you're loving one another and if you're loving God, we're going to follow those commandments. Because if we're doing these things, if we're committing adultery, we're murdering, stealing, coveting, we're not loving somebody, right? I think that's pretty clear. So the second one, maybe a little even more simple. It's, I love because it makes life better. Thinking about this, well, first I'll read this. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Now, I already talked about how if we're loving, I'm not committing those sins. I'm not doing those things that's going to hurt people. But sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we do. I think personally for myself, I don't know. A lot of you know this. This is our second church plant from our church in Winsville. And this is the second one I've been a part of. I actually went on the Interbelt 4 years ago out in University City in St. Louis. And during that time, I was living a totally second life. Like, I was hiding all kinds of things from all my friends, all my family. I was into all my addictions were all back. I was looking at porn constantly, not telling anybody about it, not being honest. And, you know, one day it came out, and it came out because my best friend found out. I've been lying to him and lying to everybody. And it hurt, I think, even more because when that did come out, they didn't show me hate. They didn't show me contempt. They showed me love. They showed me that I needed help. They showed me how much they still love me despite my struggles. Things were going to be different. I had to go back to Winsville. I had to fix some things. I had to learn what the root of those sins and the struggles were for me. But at the same time, those people didn't stop loving me. They had to learn to forgive me for sure. Like, there were some trust issues that were going to be there for a long time, but they loved me. Proverbs 21:21 says, "Whoever pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor." Now, there's a good word, prosperity. I like that word. I think prosperity is a pretty American word. I think it's one that churches actually modern American churches tend to use, prosperity. If you follow, or if you come to church every Sunday, God's going to give you all that you could ever dream. He's going to give you money, he's going to give you cars, he's going to give you houses, and we know from a fact from the Bible that's not true. That's not true at all. It says love. When we pursue love, we find prosperity. We find life, prosperity, and honor. And I think about the love or the life that I've found, the prosperity that I've found after letting people love me and after loving others. You know, now I get to be surrounded by all these people that do love me. I have this family that's growing. To me, that feels like prosperity. To have people by my side through the hardest things, you know. It wasn't that long ago. Maybe 10 years ago is a long time. But, like, I didn't feel like I could have any of those things. I didn't feel like I could have friends. Didn't think I was going to have a family. You know, now I've got so many friends. I have a wife that loves me and supports me through anything. I have a son. Never thought that was going to happen. I'm going to try not to cry this whole sermon. But I have so many things, and I view that as real prosperity. It's not those things, man. My minivan is killing it, but it's not the Ferrari I want, obviously. That's not the prosperity I think I'm looking for in this scripture. I think God's got a different plan for us in this prosperity. So we love because God commands it. We love because it makes life better. Thirdly, I love because I was loved first. I think I've talked a little bit about that in my last couple of points. The people that have loved me count time and time again. I think about the very first time I visited the Crossings Church was at a refocused retreat with our campus ministry back in 2009, 2010. And I like walked in expecting, you know, people to be playing games or whatever, having fun, mingling with one another that they knew. But all these people swarmed me. And like, they just started loving me and being friends with me, wanting to know about my life, wanting to know about my struggles. And that was the first time I really think I saw love from people. You know, I had a pretty bad home life. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that was really the first time I saw what love from people was. And so what sparks me to love people now is the fact that I've been loved by all those different people I've been talking about. 1 John 4:19, excuse me. So we love because he first loved us. And that's from Jesus. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to talk about how Jesus first loved us. I'm going to give Reggie Cross is going to come up here, and we're going to take communion together, and we're going to talk about the way Jesus loved us first, and then I'll come back up here, and we'll talk some more.
So we're talking about loving thy neighbor, and I love that theme that we brought upon it, because when we think about who our neighbor and loving us, who's the number one neighbor that's ever loved us? That has to be Jesus. That has to be what he's done for us. It has to be the crucifixion that he sacrificed for us on the cross. You look at him, and he's been through so much. He was captured. He had the chance to get away, but he chose not to because he wanted something better for each one of us. You can think about the things that he went through. He was whipped constantly over and over again, tearing flesh off his back. And not only that, but then they threw a 300-pound cross on his back and made him carry it up a hill just so they can throw him on top of it and put 9-inch nails through his hands and his feet and let him hang to die. And when we think about that, we think about why would he do that? Why would he want to do that? You know what I'm saying? For us. And I've thought that before. I've thought the same thing. We're like, why would he want to do that for me when I'm somebody who can feel very inadequate at a lot of times in my life? Somebody who grew up in a neighborhood that wasn't beneficial at all. I grew up in a household with addicts in my household. My dad sold drugs in my household. Saw so many different people in and out of my household all the time. And why would I want to feel like, why would God want to do that for me? Why would he? It doesn't make sense to me. And then not only that, but the neighbors that we're talking about, even my next door neighbors, even my extended family, were doing the same exact things over and over again. But that's how much God loved each one of us, because he wanted something better for us. He wanted something greater for my life. He wanted something greater for all of our lives. All of us have our own stories, and we're going to hear more of those stories too today. But those stories, like, we might relate to those stories, but we all have our own. And God wants to change something within each, every one of us. And he did that through that sacrifice. And I'm going to read this passage in Isaiah 53, 4 through 6. It says, "Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. And punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." And that's God's son. That's God's son that he's willing to sacrifice. There's a lot of people in here who have kids, and I don't have kids, but I couldn't imagine ever sacrificing my child for someone else. And it puts a testament to how much God really did love us, that he was willing to do that for us. So as we're passing these emblems, we always need to remember that God is that number one neighbor, the number one person that sacrificed everything for us even to be in this room today. It wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for that. So as we pass these emblems, I want you guys to remember that the bread that we're taking is the body that was broken for each one of us. For all those things that have happened to us or that we've done, he's taken that on upon him, and that's what he took on the cross for us. And that blood was shed for the same reason. So I'm grateful that we're really talking about this love thy neighbor, because God is that number one neighbor, and he's sacrificed himself for each one of us and for everything that we've been through. So I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then the worship team is going to sing a song while we pass these emblems. God, I just want to come before you. Thank you just for the sacrifice and the sacrifice and everything that you've done in my life. I'm utterly grateful. I know I always don't show it, and I pray that I can be a man that's going to do that. I know you're going to be working in everybody's lives in this room, but I pray that not just today, but every day that we wake, that we remember the sacrifice that you made for us. There's nothing else that anybody can do that's going to better our lives than for what you did on the cross for us. I pray that you can do everything I pray that we can just listen to what Max has to say today and listen to these testimonies and understand that we all have hurts and we all have things that we've been through, but we need to let ourselves open up and be able to let other people in so we can have a greater life than some of us didn't have growing up. So I just want to thank you for everything you've done in my life and everything you're going to be doing in everybody's lives in this room. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.
The next verse we're looking at here and talking about how we love because we were first loved, or because we were loved first, is John 15, 12 through 13. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. I think that's exactly what Reggie talked about, how Jesus did lay down that life for us. So when we look at those things, why should we love? We love because God commands it. We love because it makes life better. We love because I was loved first. Why is that difficult? I think the first thing why it's difficult is sometimes I just don't feel like it. Is that fair? Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to just feel like it, right? Sometimes I'm too tired to love someone, to go out of my way and be friends with someone. Sometimes, you know, I'm anxious, like I kind of am right now. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's deeper than just those surface things. Sometimes it's tragedy. Sometimes it's some hurts from our past that cause us to keep people at arm's length. I know that's what I am. I was sexually abused as a child, and that's caused me to keep people at an arm's length, to not let people in because I don't want to let them hurt me. Sometimes we don't feel like loving people because it's hard. So what's the choice? Well, I choose to do it anyway. Is that too simple? Choosing to do it anyway? If we really believe that I love because God commands it, and I love because it makes life better, and because I was loved first, we got to at least put some kind of stake behind that. I know that it's going to take some work for people like me or people like us that struggle to let people in. Like, I know it's taken me a lot of times in, you know, the Wounded Heart, a class we have for those childhood victims of sexual abuse, to deal with those things, to learn to let people love me, to learn how to love people correctly and appropriately. Sometimes it takes grieving. Sometimes it does take a lot of work. But ultimately, that starts at a choice to do that anyway. Jeremiah 17:9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" When it talks about the heart here, I think it talks about our heart is the center of who we are. It's who we are when no one else is around, who we are inside our own thoughts, what those feelings are. That's the center of who we are. And this says the heart is deceitful. Sometimes our feelings aren't as important as we make them out to be. I think sometimes I get that idea of I'm too tired, or I don't want to trust this person. And that's not truth. What's truth is that person needs love. So sometimes we have to just choose to do it anyway. The next testimony we're going to be hearing from tonight is Rosa. I'm super excited to hear from Rosa. Come on up. Your microphone's up somewhere. Just super excited to hear from her. She's one of the sweetest ladies I've ever met, and she's got a great story. I'm going to let her tell you that. So give a hand for Rosa.
Hi, I'm Rosa Conley, and I've probably got more years on any of you. And I can tell you a story for the next 10 hours. But we'll just, you know, take it down to about here. When I was growing up, I had the most wonderful parents in the world. They were good to me. They loved each other. They were kind. They were loving. And my grandparents were Baptist ministers. So I stayed a lot of times with my grandparents. And growing up, I knew God. I knew God was everywhere. I knew He was for everybody. And there was no doubt in my mind that there was a God in this world. And He was for me. I knew He was there, but I didn't know Him personally. I had never called on Him and said, "Hey, I need something." I got married at 16. I was too young. I had three wonderful kids by the time I was 20. And I was so jealous of my husband because he had all the freedom in the world. He could come and go as he wanted to. And I didn't know how to handle that. But my kids needed lots of love and time. I didn't always do that, but I loved them. And I wanted the best in the world for them. I just didn't know how. I just didn't know how to do it. I found that I wanted, that I wasn't ugly or dumb. Someone paid attention to me after a while because I'd been beat down pretty hard. But I found it all in the wrong ways. Not good for my kids or not good for myself. All the time I was looking for God, knew He was there, but didn't know how to find Him. Like this. Like this.
Oh, like this?
Okay. Like that. No.
Oh, you just don't touch this.
Oh. All right. We got that one. You know, an old dog, it takes it a little longer to learn, but we catch on. We had some good times in our marriage, but not enough to count. We argued in front of the kids. I got shoved around and pushed around, and I did a little shoving back. So it wasn't good for our kids. That wasn't what they needed. That just wasn't what life was all about. And then down the road, we got a divorce. And then I met a man, a very, very good man, that loved me, would take care of me, and wanted to be a part of my life and wanted to let me be a part of his. When we got married, we put our families together. We had, I had three, he had five. So our bedrooms were a little crowded for a while. We put them together, and some days were very hard. Some days were very, very good. Till we learned how to love each other, respect each other, and care for each other's space. And to know that each one of us was meant to be loved and to care for, and it was our job to try to do it for the others. When we had our kids all grown, and we got us a camper, we went traveling. We had a good time. Took my parents with us a lot, went to Texas, got to play in the sand and stuff. And then one day, I was 64 years old. I had missed my mammogram. 2 months later, the doctor called and says, we need to have that. So I went and did it. She called a few days after that and said, you need to come in and talk to us. While I was on the phone, I knew that was not the best news in the world. So I looked at that phone and I said, God, I can't do this. I can't handle this. You're going to have to do it for me. I just can't. And he never let me down. He said, I'll do this. Don't you worry. I've got this. So we went through all of the things for about two years. Had the most wonderful family, my friends. My wonderful husband was there 24/7. I was never let down, never alone, and never scared. And when God told me not to worry, I didn't. Because he's going to take care of it. And he did. I got over that. 5 years later, they found three more places. So by this time, I'd had five different kinds of cancer. Satan was after me. And you know what? God had said, don't worry about it, and I wasn't going to. They took care of that, too. I'm just fine. Just fine. Look a little funny, but I'm just fine. But I was still, all this time, looking for God. Wanted to know where I could find a good friend that would just love me, would just care for me. You know, somebody that I could talk to and trust and to get back. My husband was great, but he wasn't God. Bless his heart, he tried, but he wasn't. So, but I have the most wonderful family in the whole world. And if you want to argue with me about it, we'll do that later. But we'd heard about the crossing from a family member, and we come to see if we could help when they started this here in Collinsville. We thought maybe we might be worth something to somebody. So we came out. You know what I found? I found the most love, the most wonderful people, the kindest people, the most caring people, the most people that would look at me. I could tell them what was wrong with me, and they'd say, oh, well, we'll pray about it. Oh, yeah? Okay. So that's what we did. And I learned that God was there for me all those years, that he never turned his back on me, not once. He was there for me, and he is there for me 150% right now because I reached out to him, and I never want to be away from him again. I am so blessed to be in this family and in this church, and in this place. I am so glad that you guys came to Collinsville. And I pray that we just fill this place full. Thank you.
This is not my microphone. I keep thinking that I need to talk through this microphone because that's what I use every week. Thanks, Rosa. That's a really awesome story. So the next thing we're going to look at is when we're looking at why should I love my neighbor, there's a question, who is my neighbor? Part of me is wondering, maybe it's even my physical neighbor. Have you ever had neighbors that you don't get along with? I've had a few neighbors that I've gotten in some pretty good clashes with, but I don't think that's specifically what Jesus is talking about here. So the first kind of neighbor we're talking about is the one who treats me well. The ones who treat me well. Specifically, when I think about the ones who treat me well, a few kind of people come to my mind. Like when I go over to somebody like Jake's house and he's made buffalo chicken dip, that's being treated well. I love that. Or when I go to Wes's house and Wes has got pork loin and jalapeno poppers, or anytime I go to Beth's house for any reason, no matter what she's made, or June, I love when people feed me. It's real easy to love those people. It's real easy to love those people that treat us well, right? Sometimes there's some barriers there, obviously, but it's probably a lot easier for most of us to love the ones that love us first. That's specifically when Jesus is asked this. Jesus gets asked this by one of his disciples when Jesus is talking about loving your neighbors. One of them says, "Who is my neighbor?" I didn't put the whole story here, but we're talking about the Good Samaritan story, which a lot of you may have heard if you have any kind of church background or history. But the story is that there's a man who's beaten and robbed and just left to die on the side of the road. You have a Levite pass him. He sees him on the side of the road, and he says, "Oop, I'm going to go on this side of the road. I'm going to walk away from that dude, not touching him. Don't want nothing to do with that." There's a priest or somebody else like that. They just dodge out of the way. They look at him, and they just keep on walking. But this good Samaritan, who would have been despised at the time by the Jews, the Samaritans were dirty people. We don't want anything to do with them. The Samaritan, this is what it says. But a Samaritan, in Luke 10, says, as he traveled, he came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. And that Samaritan picks that man. He gets down on his level. He picks him up. He bandages him up. He takes him to an inn in a nearby town. He puts him up in this inn. He helps him. He heals him, or helps to heal him. He gives the innkeeper money. He says, "Hey, let this man stay here as long as he needs. Here's some money. If it's not enough, I'll come back and give you more." That's what Jesus said that neighbor is. The neighbor's the one who looks past everything. He loves us regardless of our situation. But the other side of the coin, Jesus also talks about, number two, the ones who don't treat me well. And that's not as easy. Much harder to love the ones that don't love us well. Specifically here, thinking about my life, someone I've been struggling to love over the last several years is my dad. If any of you know me, if you know my story at all, you know I didn't have a good upbringing. My dad was very physically abusive. He's an addict. He sold our stuff to get drugs. He was in and out of my house, cheating on my mom, beating my mom, beating my sisters, beating us. He's a bad dude all around. And it's hard to love someone like that, even if over the last few years he's tried to make some changes. He's gotten into Alcoholics Anonymous and Sexaholics Anonymous, and it's not anonymous anymore. Sorry, Dad. He's really tried to make some of those changes. But looking at my history with him, it's hard to love someone that did those things to us. But this is what Jesus says in Luke 6. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. I find that really challenging, personally. But I know that's what Jesus wants. That's what Jesus says here. And I know that over time, as I've started to talk to my dad more, I've been able to find some healing in that relationship. Obviously, it's not that dream father-son relationship we all long for, that throw catch with him in the yard and, all those kind of things. Like, I don't have that. I'm not going to have that ever. But I do get to have healing. I get to know more about him and know why he made some of those choices. I get to at least have some closure in our relationship. And, one of these days he's not going to be around. And I'm going to be grateful that I had the chance to talk to him and build something with him. So why are those things difficult? Sometimes people don't click. And I think that sounds kind of trivial when you look at stories like that. Some people just don't click. Like, sometimes people just don't mesh well. Specifically, I was actually thinking, I was looking over the sermon last night, over and over again, I kept thinking about this one person, and I asked her if I could talk about it. Jess Williams, a member of our church out in Wentzville. Me and her have never, ever, ever, ever gotten along. Every time we've had interactions, we butt heads, we always make mean looks at each other, and I never understood it for such a long time. So one time, I called her, I said, "Hey, let's get coffee. Let's figure out what this is. What's going on?" And I sit down with her, and I tell her, "Hey, I just don't want to be insecure. I don't want to be worried. I don't want to just have these thoughts. But I really feel like you don't like me. And she takes a second, drinks the coffee that I just bought her, and she says, I don't like you. And we got to talk about it. And and there were some pretty real things that came out in that conversation. She told me, hey, just like that story about me hurting all those people at the Interbelt Church, she said, a lot of those people are my friends. I love those people. You hurt a lot of people I love. It's hard for me to look at you as someone I can like when you've done those things. And just thinking about that. We got to talk about it. We got to talk that kind of stuff out. It came out that she didn't think I took responsibility for a lot of things. So I learned a lot from this conversation with her. But the choice here was I choose to find a way to relate. Like, even if we don't click, there's something that we can have between two people. We got to talk, and we found a way to relate. Both of us love Jesus, and both of us really do love those people. And even if there's like nothing else in common other than those two things, those are pretty important things. Our love for one another, our love for the people around us. I'm never going to call Jess Williams and be like, hey, you want to come play D&D with my guys on Tuesday night? Never going to happen. Never in a million years. I'm probably not going to hang out with her and whatever she's doing. I don't know what she does. But we find ways to relate. Actually, I was making a joke. The only time we've ever agreed on something was a Facebook post a while back. There was like that poll going around of, how do you like your bacon? And everyone's like, oh, I like my bacon super crispy or even kind of burnt. And me and her both go, floppy and undercooked. Yes, we have something in common. I'm super excited about that. So we choose to find ways to relate. Our relationship's not built around bacon. It's built around love. But bacon's good to have. Bacon's always a good cure to things. Isaiah the prophet, God speaking through Isaiah the prophet in Isaiah 55 says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You know, when God's choosing to love us, when Jesus is choosing to love us, he's not looking at those things. He's not looking at those exteriors. He's not looking at those things we've chosen to do. Jesus has chosen to love us because he loves us. That shows us in this passage. He says, your thoughts and my thoughts are not the same. Like, when I'm thinking about judging somebody or not loving somebody for some dumb reason, that is not what Jesus is thinking about that person. So that's my challenge here. It's my challenge to me, because I know that's how I can be. So the next person I want to have come up and talk about that, he's super excited, Sean, wherever you went, there you are. Did you get to practice yet? All right, well, here's Sean. He's going to tell you about it.
All right, my name's Sean Trowlard. Hello. And I'm part of the campus ministry here at the Crossings, and I started coming around about a year and a half ago, a little bit less, and I met y'all through, I guess, my girlfriend who went to SIU. We met them through the campus ministry, and I was definitely a difficult person to reach just because I didn't exactly know you guys at all. It was just like Kara changing things in my life. And for a while there, that was not the easiest thing, and I really just didn't know what like a good relationship with God looked like, or even just like a proper church to look like. I mean, I'd only ever been around, like, when I was young, just very hypocritical people, just went to church on Sunday, and then, you know, Monday night, we were all hanging out, and they were drinking, so it was different, and it was definitely an adjustment, and when I did finally meet y'all, came to my first cross chat, was very anxious, quiet, sat in a corner on my phone, didn't want nothing to do with you guys. All I knew is that Kara was already changing things without my consent, and that I was not exactly stoked. But it was definitely a change in my routine, and it was hard. But I mean, eventually they did put a lot of time and effort into really just trying to be my friend, and showed me a lot of love. Just kind of showed me what a good relationship with God looked like. Showed me with what a good relationship is between like a man and his wife, a man and his kids. I mean, I just seen a lot of things, and at Tennessee trip specifically, I broke down playing stupid board game we was all playing, and I decided maybe they were right, just maybe, and I don't know, best decision ever made. Started studying, and I don't know. Just because of the love that they showed me and the care, I mean, I learned what a good relationship with God looked like and just how to have one myself. I'm more confident. I mean, the fact that I'm talking through this microphone right now is not something that would have ever happened a year ago. I mean, moved up in the world twice. I got two different jobs. Now I worked at, what's it called, landscape company over the summer. Now I'm working at FedEx. That never would have happened. I mean, just been part of the church in multiple ways, just multiple ministries. I've been part of the media ministry, part of the Levite ministry now, help in the basket passing ministry, you know, passing baskets. But I don't know. I'm just very thankful for the opportunity these guys have given me just to now be able to reach out myself to, like, just family and to people that I know.
It really is really cool to get to see how people like Sean and Rosa and Emily get to take that love that's been given to them, and then they get to process it, and they get to learn how to love other people. It's just really cool, I know personally for me, just to see how that comes full cycle. So we've talked about who our neighbor is and why we should love them. Let's talk about how we should love them. Put some practicality behind this a little bit. First thing we should do, I think we choose to look at our neighbor. And what does that mean? Does that mean I just... It's more than just physically looking at them. It's looking at their actual self, right? It's not just looking at their externals. It's not just looking at the things they like to do. I told them I was going to make them do this. Where you at? David, stand up. Stand up, boy. But I got to give you some background. That's David. You can sit down. David, before that, I should tell you, I was raised in a really racist town. I had next to no interactions with black people or really any race of any kind other than white people until I was about 20 years old. So about 10 years ago, if I would have run into David, I would have been mortified. I would have been terrified of that dude. But we're here now. That dude moved out of my house, a month and a half ago? We miss that dude. Like, it's totally different. It's a totally different thing when you choose to look at people for who they are and not for their externals. James 4, 11 through 12 says, "Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There's only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor?" So are we doing that? Are we looking at the people around us? Are we looking at, you know, the waitress that we're talking to, see that she's got a bad attitude, and, you know, I'm saying, all right, I'm not going to talk to her either. She ain't getting a tip from me. Or are we choosing to love them? Are we choosing to look at, maybe that waitress had a terrible day. Maybe she had some tragedy befall upon her, and she's hurting, and she needs someone to talk to her. What are we doing? Are we choosing to love people? Are we choosing to look at their outsides and saying no to them? That's a challenge for me. I do that a lot. When I go to a restaurant, that's like my biggest thing. My waitress better be nice to me. Why am I so entitled to that? I need to be looking at them and trying to make their day brighter. That's my job here on this planet. So next, I choose to look at my neighbor. I choose to take risks for my neighbor. 1 John 4, 17 and 18 says, "This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There's no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." So what's that saying? That there's no fear in love. Am I so afraid to go talk to that person that I'm that person that's nothing like me? Am I choosing to be afraid, or am I choosing to love them? If I'm really loving somebody, I shouldn't be afraid to talk to them. You look at me. I'm definitely the most athletic guy you've ever seen, right? I'm the most studly athletic dude you've ever met. That's not true. I can't even say that with a straight face. But I look at some of my best friends. You know, I talked about TC, the guy I live with out in the Inner Belt. He's definitely an athlete. He's been a wrestler his whole life. He plays disc golf. I guess it's kind of a sport for you guys to play. It's not. You stand in one spot. But one of my other best friends, Mitch Hetty, big old Mitch, everyone calls him. Right now he's a CrossFit trainer. He's jacked. He's huge. He's like 2 inches taller than me. He's got all kinds of muscles I've never heard of. But even back when I first met him 10 years ago, he was, you know, Olympic hammer thrower Mitch. He's always been this huge athletic dude. But that dude has always chosen to look past my exteriors, chosen to look at, okay, is it a risk for me to talk to this nerdy guy? Or my muscular athletic friend's going to look down on me for talking to this dude? Or am I just going to go love him anyway? Mitch is one of the closest friends I have because he chose to take risks. I can go on. Like one of my friends, Shields, Justin Shields, big burly army captain dude. Like, we had nothing in common. But he chose to go out of his way and love me. Here we are crying again. What the heck? Can I say that up here? What the heck? So that kind of leads in the same as the next point. I choose to sacrifice for my neighbor. I think about those dudes sacrificing for me. They laid down their pride. They laid down their pride to come talk to me. They laid down all their time. I can think of so many times where we were up at like 3 a.m. talking about stuff. They sacrificed that time so they could coach me and love me. Gosh, all the times they had to feed me. I came up here homeless. I came up here with no job, no place to live. And those dudes are constantly like feeding me. Like, they sacrificed everything for me because they chose to love me. 1 John 3:16 said, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Are we doing that? Are we choosing to sacrifice the little things we do have? We may not have much, but are we choosing to lay those things aside so we can love one another? That's a hard challenge. But that's really one of the most loving things to do for one another. I've never felt so loved as those guys spending time with me. I think about a specific time with Mitch where I was thinking about leaving. I was done. Like, I was so tired of my struggles. I was tired of trying to make ends meet. And I was out the door. And the dude found me in the parking lot, held me in my arms, and said, you're an idiot. And that sounds terrible, but it's one of the things I'm most grateful for, is someone to say the hard things to me. It's not easy to tell somebody that they're doing dumb things and they're wrecking their life. It's not easy to say those kind of things to people, but he made that sacrifice, and it's part of why I'm here today. So why is that difficult? What if they don't love me back? What if they don't love me back? Sometimes they're not gonna. Sometimes they're not gonna love you back. Sometimes they're gonna take your love and take and take and take, and you're gonna give and give and give, and they're gonna leave you anyway. It's a hard thing. I've known a lot of good friends that are off doing their own thing now, wrecking their lives. And it hurts. Every time you do that, it makes you want to do it less, right? Anybody ever try to love somebody after being burned so many times? It gets harder every time, right? But what's my choice? I choose to love them as best as I can. Excuse me. This is what Jesus says, Matthew 5. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. That's a really easy one for you. Just be perfect. I think to clarify on that, it's try to have that perfect love he's talking about here. He's talking about God. He's saying God causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain to the righteous and unrighteous. How many people are there? Specifically, we talked about Jesus being crucified. How many people were there, you know, throwing insults and spitting on him? How many of those people were there just hating him? And Jesus is still walking up to that hill, carrying that cross, saying, I'm dying for you. I love you. That's probably the most challenging thing I can think of. I've never been crucified, obviously. I've never been beaten the way Jesus was. Yeah, I've been hurt by a lot of people, I'm not going to lie. But I know that since I chose to love some of the people that hurt me, things might play out differently, maybe. Maybe those people who have walked away and chosen the hardship that they've chosen, maybe one day they'll be in their pit and they'll see that, man, this sucks. I need something different. And they'll look back to the time where I or one of you loved them and say, that's what I need. I need someone to love me the way that person loved me. If I didn't do that, if we didn't choose to love that person and they go back to their pit, they're just in the pit. The pit's all they got. So how are we loving people as best as we can, even if they don't love me back? I've got one more testimony to come up, and it's John Benderman. You excited?
Oh, yeah.
You got, there you go.
Hello, I'm John Benderman, and my first memory of a difficult time was when I was 10, and my dad left my mom and us kids. I began smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol in my early teens. This caused a lot of problems with my relationships and the law. A month after my 17th birthday, my mom took me in to see the Army recruiter, and off I went. I did 3 years, lots of drugs, alcohol, and came home to the same old thing, and ended up in prison within the first year. During this time period, I also gained a wife and 2 kids. We ended up moving to Oklahoma with work and also my drinking. My first marriage ended in divorce there, and then they went back to Illinois, and I stayed in Oklahoma. The next 10 years was women, alcohol, and drugs. I met my wife, June, and we got married within a couple of years. We had a child, and before she was a year old, we went to prison for meth. Then we got out. My drinking started back up. A few years later, we gathered our kids and moved to Illinois. I began working and drinking. My health got bad. I had a stroke 8 years ago. I quit smoking and my drinking down. Years later, my wife's church family had small group at the house. I would go to church from time to time. Chris Kelly asked me, would I like to study the Bible? I told him, sure, after the holidays. Then our schedules didn't work out. So other men from the small group stepped in, Robert Cox, Phil Davis, Randy Connolly. I seen God's love for me through these guys spending time with me and explaining and showing me what God's word said. I was baptized March 2015 and gave up my drinking. I've had good examples of people loving me through my difficult times, and God has shown me how to love when it is difficult, and to love others and share what has been given me. I had this highlighted in my Bible, and June's always got my Bible. She's always wanting to highlight, and I wouldn't let her. So it's Philippians 3:13-14. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it. But one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and stride towards what is ahead. I press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward. In Christ, amen.
Give it up to all of our speakers, all our testimonies tonight. It is an awesome job. I think about all the people that got to stand up and speak tonight and how the impact that was made upon them has now turned around and affected so many people. It really is just something that's kind of immeasurable. It's hard to say, hard to explain, but it's just really cool to see the way your families have changed, the way your lives have changed, and now your hope and your purpose for the future has changed. Everything about you has changed because you've let people love you and because you've chosen to love others, and that's so awesome. So what do we do with this? Looking at all these things, how we should love our neighbor, who our neighbor is and why we should love our neighbor. You know, I think Wes talked about it a little bit this morning, how that's one of the things our church is pretty good at. I think we are pretty good at loving one another. There's a lot of inadequacies and a lot of flaws we have, a lot of imperfections, but we get love right, I think. Sometimes we screw up. Sometimes I don't tell somebody the things they need to hear, the hard truths, whatever it may be. Sometimes I'm not there for somebody. I think all of us can say the same thing, but I think overall we do a pretty good job of loving one another. I want to preface this. Today we decided to take a special contribution because we do have an actual church building, believe it or not. I don't know if any of you've seen it or not. It's a building. We have it. It's over behind Home Depot, the old Pettit Ford Theater, and it needs a lot of work. We're in the process of doing some work on it now, but in order for that to happen, we've got to raise some money. We've got some bills that need to be paid and less than that in the bank. But to preface that, we always tell our guests, if this is your first, second, third time, we'd never expect you guys to give any money to this church. We know that's something for our members, the members who have seen lives change, who've seen things happen in their lives, who've seen the church bless people. That's whose responsibility it is to raise money for this church. So what we're doing today is we're trying to catch up to that gap. Our sister church out in Wentzville is doing the same thing for us, and that's pretty exciting. So here, as we're wrapping up, in your bulletins, there's a cardstock piece of paper called the crossings. Based on the back, says, "Where the problem to light meet the power of God." We never actually use that in our sermons or anything, but that's what it says. It's called the crossings communication card. It's got some information for you to fill out. If this is like your first time, you don't know what you're looking for, what you want. There's some things you can choose on the bottom there. Like if you don't know if you believe in God or if you can. Take all that stuff as truth, but you'd like to talk about it, you want somebody to open the Bible with you, you can check that. I'd like a personal Bible study. That's not for us to chase you down, send you a bunch of junk email, nothing like that, not for us to stalk you, even though that's how I met my wife. That's a terrible idea. Don't listen to that. Don't stalk people to find relationships. Don't do it. She does love to tell that story, though. Ask her. There's other things on here. I could talk about being abused sexually as a child or even physically abused. If there's hurts like that in your past, we have ministries here for that. We have ministries where you can talk that stuff out. You can learn about that from people who have struggled with the same things. We have Healing is a Choice going on right now. They'll be offering it again in a little while later, but it's about any struggles or hurts you have in your past, you know, that you want to find healing for, that you want to find a way to grieve from. We have all kinds of stuff for that. I know a lot of you probably filled this out this morning, but here we are. But we're also going to be taking this contribution here in a minute when the worship team is going to come back up. They're going to come back up and they're going to sing. They're going to sing one song, and that's going to give you time to reflect on these cards, to write anything you have on there that you may need, whether it be prayer requests or just, you know, comments, or if you need one of those things, you're going to have time to fill that out. But for our members, there's going to be a time to think about what we can contribute to this church building. There is a great need. So you can use that time to talk to your spouse and figure out what you guys are willing to give. There's envelopes. I don't know if those, they'll be passing out envelopes if you need them for cash. Also, they'll be taking it on PayPal, on our PayPal site. You guys can throw that slide back up. It's right there, crossingscollinsville@gmail.com. Just make sure to note that on your card. or on an envelope or something, that that's what you're giving, who's giving it, how much you're giving. We're going to try to get everybody back in here together after the last song and tell you how much we raise. So it'd be cool if we can get that all compiled and written down. So that being said, I'm going to pray, and the worship team is going to come back up here. Father God, you have a hilarious sense of humor. God, I love you so much. I know a lot of us here really do, God. I want to thank you for being the God that you are, a God that loves us, a God that loved us first. God, you love us in such tremendous, amazing ways, such sacrificial ways, God. You just love us no matter what. God, I think about all the times I've been selfish and I've rebelled against you, but you've been right there next to me. You've been right there next to me in person, but also you've been right there next to me and people prodding me towards you. God, so I just thank you for working the way you work, for loving the way you love, for being who you are. And God, I thank you for this church who's shown me so much love over the years, who's shown so much love to so many people. God, it's just a really amazing thing, something I never in a million years thought could happen to me. You know, 10 years ago, I would have told you you're crazy. I would have told anybody they were crazy for trying to tell me this was possible. I would have told you it's all baloney, it's fake. But God, you've proven it to me time and time again. So God, thank you so much. Again, I thank you for everything you do for us. I thank you for all the people that got to stand up and speak tonight and tell their stories. I thank you for their hearts. I thank you for all the people trying new, hard, difficult things tonight. I know personally that it's totally different. It's strange and it's hard and it's scary. But God, they all want to do something for you. They all want to trust you and they all want to be raised up by you to do things that you want them to do. God, you've told us that you have purpose and plans for us, God, and we don't always know what that is. So I'm grateful for all the hearts today that stepped up and did something different so they can try and love you in a new way and love people in a new way. So God, again, thank you for everything you do. Thank you for Jesus, and I pray this all in his name. Amen.